Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We discovered for the first time they have a bathtub room, I guess you'd call it. And there's two separate rooms. Each has its own door that closes, but these elaborate clawfoot tubs.
Not really sure what the cleaning process is between bath users.
You were worried
about.
Yeah.
I don't even like taking baths in our own house. I always wonder, like, where is the dirt going while you're sitting in the water? You just kind of sitting there. So, yeah, I'm certainly not going to start using community bathtubs in one of the busiest park lodges in the United States. Welcome to the Dear Bob and Sue podcast. Stories from our journey to all the U.S. national parks and other public lands. I'm Matt Smith.
And I'm Karen Smith. We're the authors of the Dear Bob and Sue series of books. Today, we're taking you on a road trip through Montana and Wyoming to three of the most spectacular national parks in the United States, Glacier, Yellowstone, and Grand Teton. Could there be anything more epic than that, Matt?
Well, could there be anything harder to plan, Karen? Visiting these three popular parks in the same trip takes a lot of advanced planning to secure lodging and campsite reservations. Before you can do that, you'll need to figure out what areas of these parks you want to stay in, based on what activity you want to do.
That's right. We'll be giving an overview of lodging options in and around the parks, plus a list of our favorite areas in each park that you won't want to miss. And we'll be talking about everyone's favorite subject, vehicle day use reservations, and which park requires them.
And we'll kick things off with some interesting park news.
All right, what do you want to start with today, Matt?
I would like to start our episode today with a talk about, well, kind of like park news. This is park news, I think, to talk about the eclipse that's happening. Or is it the eclipse?
It's the eclipse. But for you,
it's the eclipse.
Because you like to pronounce things with emphasis on the first syllable, like the police and Detroit. I guess for you, it would be eclipse.
The eclipse.
Karen, the rest of us, it's the eclipse.
Okay, let's talk about the 2024 eclipse on April 8th.
A lot of people have emailed us recently asking if we're going to go over towards the eastern side of the country where the path of totality is going to be so we can see the eclipse. Oh, great. Now you've got me doing it. But unfortunately, the answer is no. We're not going to be able to make it over there. But I think a lot of people are headed that way.
They are. And I must have been living under a rock because I thought that I would not in my lifetime again have to hear the term path of totality ever again after the eclipse that happened a few years ago, because they made such a big deal of it, like it's never going to happen ever again, but it keeps happening.
And it's happening in a few weeks. So let's talk about it for a second. Now, if people are not familiar with what a total solar eclipse is, it happens when the moon passes between the sun and the earth and it completely blocks the face of the sun. So the sky will get darker, not completely dark, but kind of like dusk or dawn. And this one, Matt, this is the last total solar eclipse that will be visible from the United States for 20 years. So you might not hear that phrase for a while.
Yeah, I think I was sold this story before. Now it's back.
Now it's back.
So Karen, let's talk about where you can see this path of totality.
Okay,
it's going to come across Mexico. It's traveling in a northeastern direction. It goes through Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, Illinois, Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. And that's where you would go to see it.
And the reason we're talking about this today is because it just so happens that there are two national parks that are in the path of totality. And those would be Hot Springs National Park in Arkansas and Cuyahoga Valley National Park in Ohio. So these parks are expecting huge crowds, and they have, I think, a lot of fun activities planned for April 8th.
I like fun activities. Why aren't we going?
Oh, I think it would be lots of fun too. But, you know, I mean, the costs involved for us to get there would be pretty expensive. And you'd take a look at the eclipse for 20 seconds and then wander off somewhere.
Yes, I would.
Now, the last eclipse that you mentioned, the Path of Totality, was back in August of 2017. That one was called the Great American Eclipse. And do you remember that? We were in Whitefish, Montana.
I remember everything about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thinking that it was the last great eclipse that I would witness in my lifetime. But no. Yeah, we were in Whitefish, Montana. We were unprepared for this event because the night before, we didn't have the glasses or welding helmets that you use so you can actually look at the sun while the moon's passing in front of it. And we were walking through the town of Whitefish the night before, and a couple approaches us and says, do you guys want to buy eclipse glasses?
For $5.
For $5.
I don't know. We were kind of hesitant because we thought, what if they're not really eclipse glasses? What if they're from the dollar store? And, you know, then we put them on and then we go blind.
Well, we were hesitant to buy these glasses earlier because a few days earlier, they were selling for $20.
Right.
And it's like, no, I'll risk retina damage for $20. But then the price keeps dropping. And at $5, that was the trigger point. Plus, we had had a couple of beers. So I wasn't really concerned about whether these glasses were real or not.
We were not really in the path of totality. It was towards the southern end of Montana, and we were obviously very far north in Whitefish. You know, we were up there because we were in Whitefish for a day and a night before we headed over to Glacier National Park to do some camping and some hiking. But I remember it was still a really cool thing to see.
It wasn't. So here's a word of warning to all of you folks who are going to Hot Springs National Park or Cuyahoga Valley and participating in all of those activities. When the moon passes in front of the sun, the temperature will drop. I remember in Montana, it was late August. It was August 21st, a warm summer day. And when it started getting dark, and we weren't actually in the area of total eclipse.
Matt, you have to say it.
I'm not. The path not going to say it. Still, the temperature dropped a good 5 degrees, like right away.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, so bring a jacket.
Now, you can look, those two national park websites actually have information on the eclipse as far as what time it's going to happen. I believe the Hot Springs one was around 1 in the afternoon, and the Cuyahoga Valley, you know, being further northeast, was going to be around 3. But double check that because you certainly wouldn't want to miss it if you're traveling all that way to see it.
Yeah. Okay. So that's our first piece of park news. What else you got?
All right. I read some interesting news about Glacier National Park, which of course is a park we're going to be talking about today. You know, we had mentioned earlier in a podcast episode that the Blackfeet Indian Tribe recently released a herd of wild bison into the foothills at the base of Chief Mountain. This is on tribal land just beyond Glacier National Park's boundary.
If they weren't wild before, they are now.
That's right.
They're out there. They have to fend for themselves. But this is a cool thing because they believe that they're likely to wander over to Glacier National Park. And, of course, the Park Service has worked with the Blackfeet Nation on this. So they're prepared. They know what might happen.
Right. And Glacier National Park officials just announced that they just secured $1.5 million in funding from the Inflation Reduction Act so they can continue their work on what they call advancing bison reintroduction. And I think that means they have to figure out where the bison are likely to enter the park, what that means to the park, what that means especially to the visitors and to the cars that are driving through and all that stuff.
And how this will help reduce inflation. So I'm looking forward to the bison crossing the road often, and then inflation will come way down.
Yes, let's hope. Fingers crossed on that one. It'll be interesting, though. I don't know if any visitors this summer, 2024, will see bison yet, or how long it's going to take them to wander into the park. But the park says they expect the herd to roam freely over the National Park Service land there. So that would be really cool.
Yeah, this could take a few years to kick in. Although, you know, bison, they're always roaming. And if you watch them, they roam consistently. They can cover a big distance. So maybe they'll go to the park this summer.
Yeah, maybe so. I can't wait to see them, though.
Okay. Got the bison herd over by Glacier National Park. That's exciting. Do we have any other park news?
Well, one more thing I wanted to mention in Yellowstone. You know, it's a sure sign of spring when the first grizzly bear emerges from hibernation. And the park announced that on March 3rd, some backcountry skiers in the Specimen Ridge Trail area observed the first grizzly bear of 2024. And apparently in 2023, the first bear sighting occurred on March 7th.
Okay, so the bears are out. At least the male bears are out.
The male bears are. Now, the females with cubs don't emerge until April and early May. So you're not going to be seeing those yet. And interesting, the park did say on their website, when bears emerge from hibernation, they look for food, and they often feed on elk and bison that died over the winter. And a warning to all visitors, they will react aggressively to encounters with people when feeding on carcasses.
Or really anytime.
Right.
So I think they should just say, stay away from the bears, whether they're feeding or not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you know what I wondered, Matt, when I read that is, okay, so skiers, backcountry skiers, saw a bear come out. That's great. But how do they know it was the first bear?
They don't know.
Okay, so no, it's symbolic. It's like the groundhog on Groundhog Day.
Well, that's kind of a different thing.
Okay. But there could have been some grizzlies who popped out a day or two earlier.
Yeah, that nobody saw. Okay, great park news.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, and that is going to wrap up the park news because we have a lot to talk about today. This episode is about planning a trip to three of the most spectacular national parks, Glacier, Yellowstone, and Grand Teton.
And we get a lot of questions from listeners about doing this, it's not a loop, doing right. this trip. They want to see these three parks together. They're not all that close to each other. Obviously, Yellowstone and Grand Teton are right next to each mm-hmm. other. Glacier's kind of a haul away.
Right.
However, this might be the only time they're going to come west to see these parks. They want to get it all in. So we are going to accommodate with, if you're going to do these three parks at once, here is a 9 to 10 day-ish itinerary that'll allow you to see the highlights of these parks.
Exactly. And we're going to talk about some lodging and where you might want to think about staying and some of the highlights. But you know, Matt, it brings up an interesting question. So we are part of a Facebook group called Travelers of the U.S. National Parks, and there are about 200,000 members on there. And people are always asking questions about their park itineraries to other, you know, members on this Facebook group. And they ask about, you know, we're doing the five Utah parks and this is our schedule, and they put their schedule on. And a lot of people comment about how, oh, that's not nearly enough time. You're just rushing through. You're not going to see anything. This is ridiculous. And, you know, it brings up a point about, for a lot of people, it's going to be expensive to travel to the West and visit these parks. They only have so much vacation time. And maybe they do just want to get a taste of these parks, right? And then come back another time and spend more time. So what do you think about, instead of spending a week in each of these parks, which you could totally do, just hitting a couple of days in each one?
Well, you know, that's how we did it when we visited all of the national parks. And a lot of people said, well, you rushed through, you didn't see it all. Now, I thought that was fine because we have now gone back to so many of the parks. And so when you go back a second time, then you have the lay of the land. You kind of have some more information. I think it made our future trips more enjoyable and more efficient because we had been there once. Not everyone has that opportunity, right, to go to these parks over and over again. I think it's a good way to do it. Sometimes that's what you want, is a taste of all of these parks.
Well, sure, and especially for people who are trying to take their kids to all the national parks. People have limited budgets and limited time, vacation time. So that's why we are doing these three parks sort of as a 10-day trip. Not that we are telling people, hey, do all three parks together, but for all the people who want to do that, we hope you can find some tips in this episode.
All right, so our first tip is, you're going to have to plan this way in advance. And by that, we mean at least a year out.
Yes, absolutely. These are big, crowded parks. The lodging is tough to get. If you're camping, the campsites are tough to get. You want to be thinking about this at least a year out. And we have said this before, too. The best time to go to do these three parks would be July, August, and the first week or two in September, and that's mainly addressing Glacier, not so much Yellowstone and Grand Teton.
That's right. These are mountainous areas. Even Yellowstone can get snow. Well, Yellowstone can get snow any time of the year, right? And right. So if you have limited vacation time, you're going to plan the big trip once, you want to try to hit July, August, early September. That's going to give you the best chance of good weather.
Now, what is tricky about seeing these parks if you're flying is where to fly into, because there is not one big major city that's close to all of these parks. So for convenience, probably the closest one, if you're doing all three, would be Bozeman, Montana. There, you know, are some other small airports in Montana like Kalispell and Missoula. But we have heard that people also fly into places like Spokane, Washington, and Billings, Montana.
There's really no one great place to fly into. You're going to have to do some driving from wherever you fly into. You could also fly into Jackson, Wyoming, or Idaho Falls in Idaho, also Salt Lake City.
Now, ideally, to save on driving, if you could fly into one airport, let's say, you know, in Montana to the north, see everything and then fly out somewhere to the south of Grand Teton, that would be ideal. But we know that when you rent a car and you drop it off at a different airport, the costs can really skyrocket. So you might need to be flying in and out of the same airport. So, you know, it's just going to depend where you live, the airfare prices, and how you want to handle that.
Okay. So regardless of how you get there, let's start in the north in Glacier National Park. Now, if you're staying in hotels as opposed to like camping, just know that this is a fairly expensive trip in terms of park lodges because everyone else wants to go during these times.
Exactly. And you know, the thing is, not only are the park lodges expensive, but all of the hotel rooms in the surrounding towns are also pricey. So people stay in Columbia Falls, Whitefish, and Kalispell, to name a few. And when you look at hotel prices for the summer, you might have a little sticker shock on that.
And those towns are fine to stay in terms of closeness to the park.
Yes.
I mean, there's a little bit of a drive, but you're going to have to expect that unless you are lucky enough to get one of the lodges.
Right. And now speaking of luck, here's how that works. The park hotel reservations go up a year in advance on the first day of the month. So if you want to book a room, let's say for July 15th, 2025, then those reservations are going to open up on July 1st of 2024.
Yeah, and I would say that it is worth the splurge to stay in the park.
Absolutely, because you are right there. And we're going to talk about some of the lodges. We haven't stayed in all of them, but we have stayed in quite a few. Now, there are a couple of concessionaires that run the park lodges. So we're going to talk about first the Mini Glacier area. Those two lodges are run by Zantara, and that would be the Mini Glacier Hotel and the Swift Current Motor Inn.
Right. We have stated both of those. The Mini Glacier Hotel is the traditional historic lodge that is right on the lake and has great views. It's the iconic lodge. Like the Swift Current Motor Inn is a little bit further away from the lake and has motel type rooms in small cabins. Mm-hmm. You know, the preference would be to stay at the Mini Glacier Hotel. That's the nicer of the two.
Yes, it's a gorgeous hotel. And even if you don't get reservations there, definitely go in and take a look. One of our favorite things to do is sit out on that back deck that overlooks Swift Current Lake and have a drink. And if you're on that deck and you look over to the hillside on the right, the far right, I swear every time we've been there, we have seen grizzly bears walking along that hillside.
And if you're there on that back veranda, you'll know what we're talking about because there'll be a whole bunch of other people looking there with their binoculars and telescopes set up looking at that hill.
Right. One plus on the Swift Current Motor Inn is it is less expensive and it sits right at the trailheads to some of the most epic hikes in the Mini Glacier area. And we'll talk about those in just a second.
Right. Also in the western side of the park, the West Glacier area, you've got Lake McDonald Lodge and the Village Inn at Apgar.
Yes, those are also run by Xanterra. On the east side of going to the Sun Road, they also run the Rising Sun Motor Inn and Cabins. We have not stayed in those, so we can't offer any opinion, but I think those are fairly popular.
And then there's another concessionaire, Pursuit, which handles the Glacier Park Lodge, the Belton Chalet, St. Mary Village, and the Motel Lake McDonald.
Right. Now, the Motel Lake McDonald is close to Lake McDonald Lodge, but they are two separate properties. So just note that. We have stayed in the Glacier Park Lodge and in Belton Chalet. And those, I mean, we were happy with those overall.
Yeah, I think the Glacier Park Lodge is beautiful on the inside. It's probably the best preserved lodge relative to what it looked like when it was built. But it's a little bit further away from some of the main attractions in the park.
Right. And I think they have been slowly trying to renovate this lodge. The lobby is absolutely stunning. They also call it the Big Timber Lodge because of these massive timber supports that are in the lodge. I think when you book, you have the choice of a renovated room and a non-renovated room, and it does make a difference.
And then the Belton Chalet, which isn't actually in the park, but it's right across the street. It's one of the historic lodges. We've stayed there several times. It's not as grand on the inside, but we think it's fantastic.
It was the first of the park lodges that was built by the Great Northern Railway for their passengers who came to the park. We love the location. Right across from the West Glacier entrance is perfect. One note, the train runs right basically in front of, on the other side of Highway 2, but right past the lodge, basically. And people who stay on the north side of the hotel, we have heard complain about the train noise, the whistle and so on. We've always stayed actually on the south side, and it hasn't bothered us at all.
No, but I do like the sound of a train at night.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. Also, the Belton Chalet is less expensive, and I think that it seems like the Glacier Park Lodge is also less expensive than some of the others, so you might check those out.
So those are the lodge options, the historic lodge. One thing we should mention, which is probably the most important detail regarding Glacier National Park, is they require day use reservations.
And, you know, they have tweaked it every single year. So if you're booking a trip for 2025, it could be different. But currently, May 24th through September 8th, you need a vehicle reservation for the west side of going to the Sun Road and the North Fork area. And that's from 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. And then starting July 1st through September 8th, you'll need one to enter the Mini Glacier area from 6 a.m. to 3 p.m.
So, okay, going from the east side of the park up over going to the Sun, you don't need a reservation?
Interestingly, no, you do not need one if you're entering on the east side by St. Mary's Visitor Center. You mm-hmm. don't need a reservation. It's only from the west. Now, here's the thing. A lot of people, you know, they're planning a year out and they're worried, well, what if when the reservations go up a few months ahead of time, what if I can't get one? You know, and one way around that is you don't need a day use reservation if you have booked a lodge or if you have some kind of a tour reservation, whether it's a boat tour, horseback riding or whatever. But just note, it's only for that specific area.
Right. So the areas like Lake McDonald Lodge, if you have a reservation at that lodge, you don't need a permit to get in.
Exactly. You don't need a reservation. But then the next day, if you want to go hiking in the Many Glacier area, you would need one for Many Glacier area. So again, it only waives the day use reservation for the area you're in. Now, we just wanted to mention quickly that one great way around this is if you book a boat tour. There are 4 different boat tours. There's Lake McDonald, St. Mary, Two Medicine, and Many Glacier. That is a really fun thing to do, to get out on the water and look at the scenery and to be able to sit back and relax and not have to drive.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a great tip on how to get to these places without a day use reservation, and the activity itself is
right.
Fantastic. Okay. So our recommendation for a visit to this park is to stay at 2 different areas of the park. Once in West Glacier and then another night at Many Glacier. Or you could stay at the St. Mary area, but our first choice would be West Glacier and then Many Glacier.
Right, because that is going to cut down on a ton of driving. So for 2 full days in Glacier, we would recommend on day 1, you drive going to the Sun Road and you stop up at Logan Pass. There's a visitor center up there to hike. There's a couple epic hikes up there. You could do Hidden Lake Overlook. You could hike all the way to Hidden Lake, or you could do the Highline Trail. And then when you're done hiking, you continue driving on going to the Sun Road to the eastern side to St. Mary. And there are other hikes you could hike to St. Mary and Virginia Falls.
But one thing you got to remember is parking's always an issue up there at Logan Pass. And when the parking lot is full, they put barriers across. You can't get in. And another thing for people who might be driving an RV or pulling a trailer, there is a 21-foot length limit for any vehicle going up the Going to the Sun Road, which basically means anyone pulling a trailer, because there's really no way to have a vehicle plus a trailer that's less than 21 feet. And they do check. They're looking for people all the time. They will pull you over. They will give you a ticket.
Yes, there is a ranger that stands outside of the Logan Pass Visitor Center at the entrance to the parking lot to monitor the cars going in and out. And when he or she sees a violation of this, then they send a law enforcement ranger to write a hefty ticket. So that being said, if you have plans to do this 3-park trip in an RV, just know that if it's longer than 21 feet, you won't be able to drive up the alpine section of Going to the Sun Road.
Also, it cannot be wider than 8 feet.
Oh, right. And when you drive this, you will understand why.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to day 2, the second day, we would absolutely recommend going to the Many Glacier area of the park. This is our favorite section. Some of the best hikes in any national park are there, including Iceberg Lake, Ptarmigan Tunnel, Grinnell Glacier, Cracker Lake. I don't know, Matt, what was your favorite out of all those?
They're all fantastic. I don't know which one's better than the others.
They are. I think maybe Grinnell Glacier is the most epic. And if the hiking distance is too long, you can also combine it with the boat tour to cut out a few miles of hiking. The other thing I wanted to say, when we did Ptarmigan Tunnel, and Iceberg Lake in one day. I tell you what, when they opened that tunnel at the top, which they don't open until I think maybe late July, so it's only open for a short time, and you walk through that tunnel to the other side, that view is mind-blowing.
Yes, you get to see the northern part of the park, and that's an incredible sight. So yeah, I don't think you can go wrong with any of these. Like you said, the Grinnell Glacier, that's probably the most iconic trail. A lot of people do that. You can get up to where the Grinnell Glacier kind of was. It's kind of still there, but now there's a lake in front of it.
Right.
Where the glacier used to be, and there's icebergs in that lake, and so that's beautiful.
We should note, too, as we're talking about hiking, that you will absolutely need bear spray for all 3 of these parks. So I just wanted to make sure we didn't forget to mention that.
Yeah, and that's not this overly cautious thing. Oh, take your bear spray. Be careful. In all 3 of these parks, you are likely to see grizzly bears, and you really do need bear spray. Now, you also don't need to, if you see a bear that's 100 yards away, get it out and start spraying at it, which people do, and that's yeah, not good.
Right.
It's really only for a close encounter, but you should have it with you.
Absolutely. And you know, you cannot fly with bear spray, I think, on most airlines. And so you'll want to buy some when you get to the park. Some parks, you can also rent bear spray. So check at the visitor center in all of these parks and see what your options are. Okay, so those are our recommendations. Now, if you have an extra day, or maybe you're not a hiker, you just want to drive and see the scenery, we're just going to mention quickly, you could drive to the North Fork area, which is on the western border of the park. This also needs a day use reservation. And you can drive out to beautiful Bowman Lake. And even more importantly, stop at the Pole Bridge Mercantile.
Yeah, the Pole Bridge Mercantile has fantastic pastries. Huckleberry bear claw pastries, you cannot buy too many of those. I can tell you from firsthand experience, once you get back into your car, you'll wish that you bought more.
I know. It was a complete rookie mistake when we went, because we bought a bear claw, one each, and then we got back in our car and ate it in 30 seconds. Right. And then we thought, why didn't we buy more? And unfortunately, when we were there, it was during COVID and they had people lining up outside. They were only letting a couple people in at a time. And so we didn't want to stand in line again to go back in. So our advice, buy a lot of pastries.
That's right. There probably still will be a line out the door. It's worth waiting. And the line moves pretty quick because people want to eat their pastries. And so they don't linger at the cash register.
Exactly. All right. And you know, for all three of these parks, if you are looking to save money, obviously the lodging is going to be one of the most expensive pieces of this. So you could camp. And most of the campgrounds in Glacier are available by reservation only and can be booked on recreation.gov.
And those reservations are usually available on a rolling basis, like 6 months in advance from the day you want to book.
Right.
So definitely book those early because they will sell out.
They sell out in 5 seconds. Just a warning. You have to be on and be ready, and you will get a campsite if you're extremely lucky. We've heard from a lot of people who were online at the time they went up and they couldn't get a thing. So it's tricky, but it is an option if you want to save money.
Okay, so that is Glacier National Park. Let's move south to the next park we would come to if we were driving, which is Yellowstone.
Now, in Yellowstone, at least for 2024, there are no vehicle reservations needed.
So that is one positive, although it is a very popular park. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're driving from Glacier, which you would be on this itinerary, we suggest you either enter on the north entrance, the little town of Gardner, Montana, or the west entrance, which is close to the town of West Yellowstone, Montana.
Now, we're biased towards Gardner and the north entrance because that's just what we know. That's how we always come in. And we know people who feel the same way about West Yellowstone. They love it and they always stay there.
And we should say West Yellowstone is more developed. It's a bigger town. Mm-hmm. It has more hotels and motels than Gardner. Also, the west entrance is the busiest entrance to the park.
So one thing to know is that Yellowstone is huge, and it's going to take you a while to get from area to area. So you just want to factor that in. Now, the main park road is kind of shaped like a figure eight, and there are five different park entrances. There's the north, northeast, east, south, and west. And when you are doing your planning and you're trying to figure out your itinerary and where you are staying, it would really be helpful if you pulled up the map. You can find a map of Yellowstone online and just got a visual of where all these places are.
Yeah, and the figure eight is, it's a lot of driving. Mm-hmm. And there can be traffic. I mean, one thing you could do if you change hotels midway through your visit to Yellowstone, then you can work some of the driving in, so as you're going to a place, it saves you from having to backtrack for that day. So, for instance, if you stayed in the Old Faithful area, which is in the south, and you want to go up to the Lamar Valley, which is in the northeast, if you're just staying at Old Faithful, the drive all the way up there and all the way back is going to be a big part of your day.
It is. When we were there last September, we thought we would drive up to Lamar Valley for sunset and to see if we could see any bison. We were staying at Old Faithful Inn. And when we looked at the map, it was ridiculous how long it would take us to get up
there. It turned into, we're going to end up getting there for sunrise.
Exactly. All right. So let's talk about the park lodges. Now, this is slightly different from Glacier in that the reservation booking window opens up 13 months in advance on the 5th of the month, not the 1st of the month. So, for instance, if you want to stay on July 15th, 2025, you are going to book on July 5th, 2024, and so on.
And people do keep track of these dates, and those lodge rooms sell out quickly.
They do.
This is the game that you have to play if you're visiting some of these popular national parks during the summer.
Now, on the north side, you're going to have the Mammoth Hotel, and also further to the east is the Roosevelt Lodge. Or as we said, you could stay in Gardner, which is just right outside the entrance to the park and the beautiful Roosevelt Arch that you drive through. Now, we have stayed in Mammoth Hotel many, many, many times.
Right. And that's a fantastic hotel. It's been through a lot of renovation in the past few years, so it's been updated. They also have some cabins attached to that complex, which we have stayed in. Those are a lot of fun as well. There's a nice little restaurant. There's facilities there.
Yes, there's a lot going on there up at the Mammoth Hot Springs area. Now, in the middle, as far as lodging, kind of in the middle of the park, you have the Canyon Lodge. Or you can stay, as we said, in West Yellowstone, drive in and out. And more to the south, you have Lake Yellowstone Lodge. On that same property, you have Lake Lodge Cabins. And then to the west, of course, you have the complex of Old Faithful, which has three lodging places. There's Old Faithful Inn, Old Faithful Lodge, and Old Faithful Snow Lodge.
Right. And of those three, the Snow Lodge is the more modern. And so those three are a little different.
They are all very different. Now, one way that we like to save money, because we love, love staying at Old Faithful Inn. So we try to book one of the old house rooms. Those do not have bathrooms in the room. They have a sink, most of them, I believe, but the bathroom is down the hall. And that's going to cut off a couple of $100 a night.
We actually now kind of prefer that.
Yeah.
Because it's fun, and usually we're not there for too many nights. And, you know, we camp all the time. And when you camp, you don't have private bathrooms. So it's like camping, but in a really nice building with a really nice bathroom down the hall. So you just get to know the other lodgers in the middle of the night when you're going to the bathroom.
Right. You can make some new friends. And they also, you know, they have a different shower room. We discovered for the first time, they have a bathtub room, I guess you'd call it. You go in and there's two separate rooms, you know, each has its own door that closes, but these elaborate clawfoot tubs, it was pretty fancy.
Not really sure what the cleaning process is between bath users.
You were worried about who's cleaning it between uses.
Yeah, I'd need to get more detail on that. I don't even like taking baths in our own house. I'm against baths because I always wonder, like, where is the dirt going while you're sitting in the water? Unlike a shower, you know the dirt's going away, but a bath, you just kind of sit in there. So, yeah, I'm not comfortable in our own house. I'm certainly not going to start using community bathtubs in one of the busiest park lodges in the United States.
So you're saying that's a no.
That's not going to happen.
All right. But, you know, the bathroom really is beautiful. And, you know, people could certainly go take a look at it.
It's good to look at. Right. Keep all your clothes on while you're doing it.
And make sure you knock on the door first. And definitely go look at the Old Faithful Inn no matter what. Because it's beautiful. And be sure you wander up to the second floor and out onto, there's a deck that overlooks the front. And you can get a drink. You can watch Old Faithful go off. It's an amazing sight.
And last September, we stayed in one of the Old Faithful Lodge cabins for the first time, and we liked that a lot.
Yes, it was a really cute little cabin, and I remember that the price on that was pretty reasonable, especially when you consider the location, which was basically within spitting distance of Old Faithful Geyser.
And we should also mention that in the southern area, kind of getting closer to the middle, is the Grant Village, which also has lodging.
Right. That's another place you could stay. Of course, we mentioned camping as a way to save money in Glacier. Same thing with Yellowstone. They have 12 campgrounds, over 2,000 established campsites. All campsites must be reserved in advance. And there are two ways to do it. You know, some of them are reservable through Yellowstone National Park Lodges. That's the website. And some are reservable through recreation.gov. So if you want to book a campsite, make sure you look at both of those.
Yeah, and also be comfortable with bison wandering through your campsite, because that does happen. We were there years ago, and we had family camping, and we went to visit them at their campsite, and bison moseyed right past their tent.
Well, yeah, there was one standing, I don't know, maybe 20 feet behind their campsite, just standing there facing their little campsite. And I asked my brother, like, are you worried about this guy? He was huge. And my brother said, look, first of all, we have nowhere else to go. And second of all, he hasn't moved. He hasn't made an aggressive move. So yes, you must be comfortable with bison and, of course, bears and you know, all the wildlife that's in Yellowstone.
Yeah, that's just part of the Yellowstone experience.
Right.
Okay, on this itinerary, we are suggesting 2.5 days in Yellowstone.
Right. So a couple of things that you could do. Definitely explore the north side. A lot of people don't get up there. So in the north, you have both the Mammoth Hot Springs area, which is more towards the west, and then you have the Lamar Valley towards the east.
And while you're up there, don't miss walking around the historic Fort Yellowstone, which now part of that is the visitor center there, and then also the Mammoth Hot Spring terraces.
I love that area because they have saved all of the buildings that the Army occupied when they were in charge of policing Yellowstone back in the late 1800s. These buildings are still there. They're used for employee housing, but it's really cool to look at. Plus, the other thing is there's usually a herd of elk that's wandering through there. So there's a lot going on in that Mammoth Hot Springs area.
Yeah, I think there have been elk every single time we've been there, and we've been there many times.
Right. And then, of course, drive through Lamar Valley because it's one of the best places to look for wildlife. You will absolutely see bison. Hopefully they're close to the road so you can get a good look. And if you're lucky, you could see wolves, you could see grizzlies, you definitely will see elk. Lots of wildlife in the Lamar Valley.
And a lot of visitors go there, pull off the side of the road, sit there and watch wildlife all day long with their binoculars or their telescopic lenses on their cameras. And there is a lot of space for people to do this.
And to spread out.
Yeah.
The other thing we would recommend is a lot of people drive, you know, halfway into the Lamar Valley, get out, look at the wildlife, and then they go back. We would suggest driving all the way, go through the northeast entrance, and you'll come to the cute little town of Cook City. You can have lunch there. There's a couple little shops. But we have seen in Cook City, we've seen a bison standing on a guy's front yard, and we've also seen a moose in Cook City.
Right. So that's worth seeing. And you could also stay in Cook City. There's not a lot of lodging up there, but there is some. That's outside the park, but that is also an option.
I forgot about that. And we stayed in a cute little cabin up there once.
Yeah,
and that was fun. Now, the center of the park has the Norris area and Canyon Village. Norris has a ton of geysers and paint pots. And Canyon Village is where the Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone is. And that's a must-see spot.
It is. And it's worth going. It's probably going to be crowded. You might have to circle a couple times to find a parking spot. But it's worth parking to get a good view of the falls.
So there are North and South Rim drives. So there's two ways to access it. There are lots of overlooks to stop at. And you can get views of both upper and lower falls. And just one note, a lot of people want to go to Artist Point because that's a really great photo spot that is along the South Rim Drive.
Okay, in the south, there's the Old Faithful area on the west side of the park. East of the Old Faithful area is the Yellowstone Lake area. And both those areas are great to visit and explore.
I know. You guys, there's so much to see, and you definitely will not be able to do it all in 2.5 days. So we just wanted to mention our must-sees. And the first one, we already talked about Lamar Valley. We already talked about the second one, Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone. What else, Matt?
Grand Prismatic Springs Overlook. That is a beautiful spring, but if you park and walk the boardwalk of the Grand Prismatic Spring, you're not going to get as good of a view of the rainbow colors of the spring for a couple of reasons. One, you're at a low angle, so it's hard to see it, and a lot of times you'll have the steam coming off of it. We suggest hiking around to the overlook.
And this is a different parking area. You cannot get to the overlook from the main Grand Prismatic Spring parking lot. So talk to the ranger. He can mark on your park map where the parking is. But you definitely want to see this overlook because you're looking down on Grand Prismatic Spring. The last time we were there, for us, it was a miracle because a bison walked right next to the spring, and we got some pictures and some video of a bison on Grand Prismatic Spring.
Yeah, that was a cool image.
And one more note, we would suggest not going early in the morning. You know, a lot of people want to go early to beat the crowds, but this place, because it can be chilly in the morning, it creates a lot more steam coming off the thermal features, and you might not be able to see the gorgeous colors because of the steam.
And Grand Prismatic Spring is close to the Old Faithful area. It's not that far away, and you definitely want to go to the Old Faithful area to see the Old Faithful Inn. That's the historic lodge. Also, there's the Upper Geyser Basin Boardwalk, and that is a fantastic area to just walk all the boardwalks. We've done that sometimes for hours to see all the geysers and mud pots and things like that.
It's our favorite. Well, we call it a hike. It's not really a hike because most of it is on boardwalk, but you can do, I think the main section is about a 3-mile loop. Of course, you can do less if you want. It continues on. You can make it a 5-mile loop, but the mud pots and the geysers are incredible along this. And if you go, you know, this is another reason to stay at Old Faithful Inn, because if you go first thing in the morning or you go in the evening towards sunset, all the day trippers have left and you'll have the place mostly to yourself.
And of course, while you're there, you're going to have an opportunity to see the Old Faithful geyser itself.
Yes, it goes off fairly regularly, and the visitor center there has a schedule of when it will next erupt. So if you're not sure, you know, you can pop in there, see when it will erupt, and then find something else to do in that area until you're ready to watch it. But, you know, we've seen it go off many times, and my favorite thing to do, they have some seating around. My favorite thing to do is to watch the faces of the other people. Because when it goes off, there is this collective, ooh, and people clap, and just seeing, I don't know, just seeing people's reaction to this incredible wonder in Yellowstone is, that's what I like to watch. I mean, Old Faithful, the Old Faithful eruption is good too, but I like to see people's reactions.
I like the bison.
Yes.
I like the bison's reaction when it goes off. Okay, so that is Yellowstone National Park. And the great thing about this itinerary is our next park, Grand Teton National Park, is adjacent to Yellowstone. And you will exit Yellowstone National Park through the south entrance. Now, there is a corridor, which is the John D. Rockefeller Memorial Parkway, which is in the National Park Service.
Right. Now, this land was originally part of Teton National Forest, but it was transferred to the National Park Service from the Forest Service in 1972, so they could create this unbroken connection between Grand Teton and Yellowstone. So the parkway extends from the northern end of Grand Teton National Park all the way to West Thumb Geyser Basin in Yellowstone, and that's a distance of about 27 miles.
And it's a beautiful drive all the way.
Oh my gosh, it's beautiful. Now, one of the things we love the most about Grand Teton National Park is that it has a little bit of everything. You know, it's got the big wildlife. You are highly likely to see moose and bison and grizzlies, and it also has great hiking trails, and it's got some of the most incredible views of any park. So this one has something for everybody.
Right, and it is different than the other two parks. All three of these parks are different, although they're, you know, they're in the West, they're mountainous, they have a lot of the same mammals in them. They each have their own unique personality. And one of the great things about Grand Teton is there's no vehicle reservation needed for at least for 2024.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised if they did start one sometime in the future. So definitely if you're planning for 2025, you'll want to check that. But yes, for 2024, you don't need a vehicle reservation. Now, the bad news regarding Grand Teton is if there is any place with more expensive lodging than Glacier, it would be Grand Teton.
Yeah, and that's because it's such a popular park. It's also close to Jackson, Wyoming, which is a very expensive town. And so, yeah, it's just supply and demand. But there are some great lodges in the park. You got Jenny Lake Lodge, you got the Jackson Lake Lodge, Signal Mountain Lodge. You've got the Coulter Bay Cabins, which we've stayed in. Also, there's the Headwaters Lodge at Flag Ranch and the Triangle X Ranch, which is a dude ranch that you could stay at. So that you have a lot of options.
Right. And people also stay in Jackson, Wyoming, and they stay in other towns a bit further out like Driggs, Idaho. We have stayed in two of the park lodges. We've stayed in Coulter Bay Cabins quite a few times, and those are on the less expensive scale as far as park lodging. I think maybe it's because they're further north. I'm not sure, but we've always enjoyed our stay there.
Yeah, I like those cabins.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a little bit more rustic, but so are we.
Just this last September, we had the chance to stay at Signal Mountain Lodge, and we absolutely loved it. We were able to catch a cancellation. I'm sure they are sold out all the time. But just to give you a frame of reference, so we were in California, and we decided to tack on Grand Teton and Yellowstone at the end as we're driving home. So we are catching cancellations, and this is probably the second week of September. So when I looked at Grand Teton lodging, a room popped up for Signal Mountain Lodge, and we had a room overlooking the lake. I think we paid in the low 300s. I want to say it was like 325. I looked in Jackson, Wyoming at the Hampton. For that date, it was $750.
Yeah, I know. 300s doesn't sound cheap, but it is relative to your other options.
Right. Yeah. And if you look at Jenny Lake Lodge, I'm sure it's probably worth it, but I'm shocked every time I look at the price of that place because that is astronomical. So just be prepared. Of course, again, you can camp in this park to try to save some money.
There are 6 campgrounds, and you have to reserve all the sites ahead of time. Campsites are reservable on recreation.gov on a 6-month rolling basis.
But you know, Matt, I was looking back at all our visits to the park, and we have actually never been there in the height of the summer when it's the most crowded.
Yeah, for good reason. and we might never go during the height of the popular months.
Now, we went our first time. Actually, it wasn't our first time. We took our kids there a long time ago. But our first time on this park journey, we went at the end of May. This was 2012. We were hiking in snow around Jenny Lake. I have pictures of pretty deep snow.
Right. I think there was 6 inches of snow on that bridge.
So that's why we suggest waiting to do these parks until July. So we've also been in September 3 different times, which was gorgeous. But I think my favorite, I was looking back on this, Matt, was early October 2020, because the fall colors were incredible. And we hadn't really expected Grand Teton to have fall colors. I don't know why, but it was spectacular.
It was beautiful. Okay, what are some of our must-sees?
So let's talk about Jenny Lake, because that's number one on our must-see list. Go to Jenny Lake. There are a lot of things to do there. You can rent a kayak and take it out. You can do the park boat tour. and you can hike, which is our favorite thing to do.
Yeah, you can take the boat tour across the lake to Hidden Falls, and then the Hidden Falls Trail, you can hike up to Inspiration Point, which is a little bit of a climb, but it's a fairly short hike, and then you get great views of the lake. However, you can keep going on that trail up through Cascade Canyon, and the further you get up there, it seems like the more beautiful it is, and you can kind of go as far as you want. I mean, it actually goes up over the mountain ranges and back down the other side, which you'd only do if you're backpacking.
Now, if you're just hiking and you don't want to take the boat tour, we're going to tell you about a different place to park where we always park. So when you park at the Jenny Lake Visitor Center, which is where the boat goes from, that is where everyone parks. And every time, even in September, the cars are parked for miles along the road because the parking lot fills up. So we always head to the northern side and park in the String Lake parking lot area.
Yeah, and that little secret has gotten out, so that's a little that gets crowded as well. But every time we've gone over to that area, we have found a parking spot.
Right.
Even when we drive past the visitor center and see the cars lined up on the highway, literally for miles.
Right. So again, you can access the Cascade Canyon, hike from there, and Inspiration Point. You cannot access the Jenny Lake boat tour unless you want to hike a really long way around the lake to get there.
Yep.
So, all right. So moving on, another great hike. This is all along Teton Park Road, is Taggart Lake. Absolutely beautiful hike. That's really popular, kind of a must do.
Also the 42-mile scenic drive, like its description, it's very scenic and you have great views of the Tetons, which is the main attraction.
Right. And, you know, we took a drive up to the top of Signal Mountain for sunset. So that's kind of a fun thing to do. Some great views from up there.
Yeah, you can also go down, drive down to the lake and find a parking spot and kind of wander along the lake.
Now, this Signal Mountain area where the lodge is, this is a fun area to visit, even if you're not staying in the lodge, because not a lot of people turn into there. And there is, there's like a camp store, there's a campground, but there's also a little kind of a, I'm not going to say it's a private beach because it's a public beach, but there's a beach next to the campground that we have gone to several times. We've watched sunset from there. Never seems to be a lot of people there.
Right. Yeah. But it's a beautiful place to watch the sunset over the Tetons.
And then if you are into photography, there are some epic photography spots you will want to check out. One being Schwabacher Landing. I hope I'm saying that right.
I hope you are too. Also, there's Mormon Rose. What's interesting about this is there are some classic photographs of these old historic barns, or there's one barn in particular with the Tetons in the background. Sometimes you'll see photos with bison in and around that. Those are kind of once in a lifetime shots.
Right.
I think the photographers who get those, either they're super lucky or they hang out there every day for a couple of months to get just the right photograph. But it is worth going over there to see the view and take some photographs of your own.
And then there's also the Snake River Overlook and Oxbow Bend. We went over to Oxbow Bend when we were there in October because the trees were this flaming yellow color. It was gorgeous. Just one note, though, if you're interested in photography, obviously the best times are going to be if you go at sunrise or if you go at sunset, and you will be there with a crowd of other photographers, most likely.
Right. One more tip to save money. If you're planning to visit all these parks, you're definitely going to want to get one of the America the Beautiful passes. If you don't already have an annual pass, it's $80. And not only will it get you and your companions into these three parks, it will get you into every federal land site for an entire year.
It's such a great deal. You know, each of these parks charges $35 per vehicle for a 7-day pass. So you'd save $25 right there by having the pass. And this is kind of a random side note, but last fall when we were in Yellowstone and we were talking to a ranger who mans that south entrance ticket booth, he told us that, I thought this was so interesting, he said that because vehicles entering Yellowstone's south entrance have to travel through Grand Teton National Park to get there, they have to pay both entrance fees at Yellowstone, even if they didn't stop in Grand Teton.
Yeah, that's an odd thing, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
Yeah. He said that visitors are not super happy about that when they end up having to pay twice.
Well, yeah, they have to pay $70 for the two parks instead of $35 for Yellowstone.
Right, you might as well get an annual pass.
Sure, at that point, right. So let's sum this up. We said 9 to 10 days. Obviously, you're going to make your own itinerary, but the way this worked out was day one is your travel day. You're going to fly, you're going to drive somewhere, right?
That's right. And so then you're in Glacier National Park for day two. So day two and three are in Glacier.
Right.
And then day four is a travel to Yellowstone, and I think you still have time for a half day inside Yellowstone National Park.
Right. I don't know if we mentioned this, but it's about a six-hour drive from West Glacier to either Gardner, Montana, or West Yellowstone. It's about the same distance to both. So 6 hours, if you got up early, made the drive, you would still have a big chunk of that day to explore Yellowstone.
Right. And the days are longer in the summer, so
sure,
you've got extra daylight. And so days five and six are full days in Yellowstone.
Right. And then day seven, you're waking up in Yellowstone. If there's something else you want to see, you could see it on the way out. Drive, that beautiful drive to Grand Teton. It doesn't take very long. And you would still have a good at least half day, maybe more, in Grand Teton.
For that day, for
right,
day
for
seven.
That day.
And
right,
then day eight, you have all day in Grand Teton. And then day nine, you would travel home or you'd drive to, let's say, wherever you're flying out of. So that's 9 days. Mm-hmm. If you added, you know, a 10th or 11th day, it gives you some breathing room in some of these places.
And obviously, you know, it kind of depends on what you're interested in. People who are hikers, their trip's going to look different than people who maybe want to go fishing or just want to drive the scenic roads. And so obviously you're going to plan this based on what you like to do and if you have kids with you. But the thing I think that's great about this, Matt, is that it does give you a taste of all three of these incredible parks.
Yeah, and that would be a fantastic trip.
It really would. And then you can kind of see what you missed, what you wish you would have seen, and you can plan to go back to maybe one of them, maybe two of them, maybe all of them, and just do it a little bit differently the next time.
All right. Thanks for joining us today for this road trip episode. We appreciate you tuning in.
And for all of you new listeners who are going back and listening to our earlier episodes from past years, we just want to remind you that things can and do change. So be sure to check the NPS Park websites for all the current information about reservations, tours, and closures, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, when we started this podcast over 4 years ago, we thought that aside from like new NPS units being designated, that the current national parks would stay pretty much the same. But that's not the case at all, is it?
No, it's fluid. It's a very fluid situation. All right. Thanks for being here. And we will see you next time on the Dear Bob and Sue podcast.